Hello and welcome to The Stack. For this week's show, we feature an exciting publishing house in Brazil, plus the relaunch of climbing magazine Summit Journal, the first in 27 years, and finally the incredible Stationery Awards in Japan. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We start the show in my home country, Brazil. After 2 weeks' stint here, I spoke to a few editors and publishers, so expect more Brazilian content in the coming weeks. First, I had the pleasure to speak with Lili Carneiro, publisher of Editora Carbono. I'm a big fan of their men's title, Carbono Uomo. They also launched a female counterpart title, Carbono Donna. And not only they publish those two titles, but they also make custom magazines for brands such as Brazilian hospitality group Fasano. In fact, we met at the Fasano Hotel in São Paulo.
Lili Carneiro, a pleasure to talk to you. I'm a big fan of your magazines. We have Carbono Uomo in front of me, Carbono Donna, and the Corriere, other magazines you do as well. But Lili, I want to know more about your story in journalism and publishing. Carbono was not your first, right? Tell us, where did you start? What was your first project when it comes to magazines?
It's a great pleasure to be talking to you, Fernando. Thank you very much. I used to work in another magazine called Wish Report. It was a huge magazine in Brazil. It ended up closing. But there I met my ex-partner, but very good friend still, Luciano Ribeiro. And we detected a gap in the market for male magazines, because we had a special issue in August and it sold a lot. It was huge with the market. And when Wish Report closed, we thought, let's create a male magazine, a magazine for the male audience. It's going to be something that the market is asking for. So we built together Editora Carbono, our publishing house, focused in making our platforms, Carbono, Uomo, our own magazine. But then the market, they already knew us and they wanted to make customized publications, as we have Corriere Fasano, as we did Breton Magazine, it's a furniture store in Brazil, as we did Trousseau, it's Bed and Beyond. And we didn't have time for Carbono and our own magazine because the market was wanting a lot for publications. And 1 year after we opened the publishing house, we had the time and the opportunity to create Carbono Uomo. And 3 years later, I created Carbono Donna.
Talking about Carbono Uomo, one of my favorite things about it is that it feels very Brazilian in a way. It talks a little bit about Brazilian luxury, but in a very Brazilian way. It doesn't feel like just a copycat of international publications. What do you think about that? Do you feel proud of that Brazilianness of the magazine?
We feel really proud of this. It's a total national product. Even though we import the paper from German, we have only Brazilian photographers, Brazilian editors, Brazilian journalists. Even when we're making an article about somewhere in Europe, we send a Brazilian journalist there to talk because we want the Brazilian look to the things. We don't go outside and we get an article from outside and we just translate it in public. No, we have everything done here. And if you go over our pages, you're going to see Amazonia, you're going to see Bahia, you're going to see all the nice places to go in Brazil. You're going to see Brazilian makers, people from here. We are very proud of this. And we always try to bring more Brazilian people than outsiders.
How hard is it to make a magazine in Brazil? I know there's been some challenges in the market, of course, during the pandemic. But I do believe there is a space for magazines like yours. But is it challenging? Tell us a bit more about that.
It's very challenging, though. We have all the bureaucracy we have here in Brazil. Everybody that runs their own business knows that. And besides this, we need to talk to all the brands to bring them to our advertising pages. So it's the Brazilian product, the needing to talk to Europe, to United States, to China, to everyone. Nowadays, we are very solid in the magazine market, and we have this door open already to everyone, but it's still challenging. We have Rolex, we have Montblanc, we have Dior, we have all the brands here. but we were born as a Brazilian magazine. Not the world, not everybody looks at this with the value we have. So we walked some years to be where we are today, but I think now we got over the challenge already.
And tell us about your readers. We were discussing about how people consume magazines. Do they still go to the newsstand, or do you also work on a subscription model? I'm very curious about that.
We totally know that the online and digital world, it's here, and we cannot run away from this. But we love the print, the press, the paper. So our focus is the paper, but we have a virtual background. We have a profile on Instagram. We have a page on Facebook where we exist online. But the digital world is facing this difficulty with the fake news. So not everybody is going to read something on the digital world and going to believe it, because everyone can go and make a profile and public whatever they want to. So the print still has a credibility. People come to the print and they believe, because there's a whole structure behind this. It's a photographer, it's an editor, it's a producer, it's the journalist. So what we put on print is, we don't go to print and put anything there. It has all the work on the background. So I think this credibility is going back to the print. And people don't go so often to newsstands like they went like 10 years ago. But we deliver a mailing door to door. We go to 18,000 hands with Carbono Donna, 18,000 hands with Carbono Uomo. So nobody needs to go to the newsstands. We go to their houses with the magazine.
And if they want to go to the newsstand, that's okay.
That's amazing. But if they don't want to, we deliver there.
But tell me about Carbono Donna. How was the reception? I mean, I have the more recent issue, and basically you have one of the most talked about women in the country. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows that, I mean, you're not just kind of a version of those, you know, top fashion magazines. You're your own product. Yeah. And you managed to have Paola Oliveira on the cover. I mean, this shows a lot of trust, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. When we were doing Carbono Uomo, we talked to a lot of brands, and the brand said, we love Carbono Uomo, but mostly jewelry and very female fashion stores. They said, but we don't have a marketing budget to be advertising in a male magazine. We wanted so much to be at Carbono, but we cannot. We don't have this budget. So we talked, let's create a Carbono for the female audience. We're going to bring all these brands together with us, and the readers are going to love it because we have a very own DNA. It's not a fashion magazine or a traveling magazine. We do a lot of everything with a bossa from Brazil. Yeah.
I like that.
We have a Brazilian bossa. And so we created Carbono Donna. Everybody loved it. It was huge. The market loved it. The readers loved it. Everybody loved it. But then pandemic stopped us a little bit. And now we are come back with all the strength.
And I want to know this other side of Editora Carbono, which is the customized magazines. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're actually doing the interview at the Fazenda Hotel in São Paulo. And you have this wonderful, I mean, I've read the previous issues, the Corriere Fasano. Yeah. Tell us about perhaps this title and the other ones you have. Okay. Again, excellent brands, right? Fasano, yeah. We all love to stay at Fasano.
Yeah, thank you so much. We have a lot of partners for the customized magazines we do at the Editora. And it's curious because we have a lot of national brands. Fasano, Breton, Trousseau, Elos. They are the most wow brands in each area. Corriere Fasano, it used to be four each year, but now it's two, but next year it's going to be four again. We deliver in all Fasanos around the world, in New York, Punta, Brazil. We have a lot in Brazil. And it's a title from inside Fasano, but we bring the content from outside. So it's not a title that sells the hotels. It's to give some content and luxury reading for the people who stay here and whoever goes to visit the restaurants. And everybody loves it. It's huge. So the ads are very beautiful and big, and the contents are very fun. Giro Fasano, the owner of Fasano, he loves it. It's his xodó. So it's something that we like a lot. And our customized publications branch, it's very special because the brands see what we do and they say, I don't even have the budget, but I want something with this face you have in Carbono. They come to us and we make it work. And we have customized publications all over. We have school, We have furniture store, we have fashion store, we have hotel, restaurants, we are all over.
Thank you very much, Lili. And for more information, go to their Instagram page, Carbono Editora. And now to all lovers of climbing, rejoice. The renowned title Summit Journal is back after a 27-year gap. The beautiful glossy title with incredible photography is a thing of wonder. I had the pleasure to speak with their new editor, Michael Levy.
I used to work for a couple other climbing magazines, left a few years ago, but I'd always known about Summit. It was founded in 1955 by these two women, Jean Crenshaw and Helen Kilness, and it was the first monthly climbing magazine in America, and it was, you know, the climbing magazine for a couple decades, and then a couple other magazines came in, and it disappeared in 1996. The old magazine had all these amazing, cool old covers with really kind of avant-garde and chic design. And so I just loved the story and the imagery. And I was like, why can't it exist for a new era? And so the hardest part was figuring out how to, who owned it still. But I kind of just started exploring, poking around, seeing what would be possible. And now, yeah, it's back.
And it's nice that you're paying tribute because, you know, it's been such a special title with such an amazing history. And by the way, I need to mention this as well. You mentioned about the chic covers and very lovely design. You can actually buy some prints from your website, right?
Yes, exactly. We offer fine prints of some of the vintage covers, more going up soon. And we'll soon be having this really cool kind of interactive cover archive online, so you can kind of scroll through all the old covers, see who designed them or took the photos, what was in the issue a little bit. Because yeah, it's, I'm definitely, the new Summit is a magazine for a new era, but it's fully informed by the original title.
Well, I have, you know, the new issue right in front of me, issue 320, spring 2024. I have to say, you know, talking about covers, it does not disappoint. But I think one of the things about this new version of Summit Journal that it's still very much a focus on print, right? I think, I know there are other climbing magazines out there with gears, which is lovely, but I think Summit Journal has a different purpose in that sense, right?
Totally. So Summit Journal is print only. So any of the articles and features inside, they don't go online. So it's, you know, the idea is that we really believe in print and that a long form story, you're going to have a better experience really sitting down with that and reading than staring at the screen. Not to say that there's not great journalism online, but in this modern media landscape, particularly in climbing and outdoor journalism, there's kind of just a focus on more content, you know. And so taking a step back and slowing down and doing less, but doing it really, really well is the goal. I'm a nerd for long form journalism. So I love The New Yorker, The Atlantic, all that stuff. And I want to do that for climbing.
And for climbing, I mean, of course, you can say this about all magazines, but I think even more for a title like Summit Journal, the importance of photography. I mean, because the paper quality is excellent, the photography is excellent. It's really, it's quite special. I was reading the story about, that I didn't even know exist actually in Ireland, about climbing some mountains in Ireland. I mean, the quality of photography is astounding. Tell us about the importance of photography for a title like yours.
Totally. It is of paramount importance. I mean, climbing, one of the things that's so cool about it is it has all sorts of drama just built into its very DNA, both in the stories, but also you look at a teeny woman or teeny guy way up there on a cliff or a mountain, and it's just, it's awe-inspiring. And particularly with climbers traveling all over the world now, or cropping up in local places all over the world, and people being able to capture so much more with, you know, without having to have a multi-thousand dollar setup. There's really phenomenal photography all over it. But the thing is then, right, I kind of think of it like Instagram's like drinking from a fire hose. Like, it's just a glut. And so really culling the, and being really intentional, curating what we want in that magazine, finding, you know, this place that you mentioned, the Ireland article. I'd never heard of it, but there's this great French photographer, Sam Bié. And he's got this eye, and this place is so spectacular. For anyone who's seen the movie The Banshees of Inisherin,
yes,
there's climbing on that island where it was filmed. And this guy, Sam B.A., went there with some climbers and were climbing on the sea cliffs. And it's just, it's breathtaking. You don't even need to read a word of the article and it'll blow you away.
This picture here is quite special as well. I don't know if you can see from the screen.
So that the picture he's shown me is it's this full spread of this guy climbing on a sea cliff with this huge wave breaking behind him. And we have a version of that on the cover. But then when you see it in a full spread, it's just AI couldn't come close.
Good. I'm going to use that quote, Michael. And the climbing community, correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, I feel that is growing. I feel that there are more people interested. Perhaps they might not be as adventurous as some people featured in your pages, but there is kind of a desire for more climbing. You see even popular culture, there's been films, documentaries about it. The interest is high, and that's why I think there's a space for a magazine like Summit Journal.
I think that's spot on. On the one hand, it's just been making more and more inroads into the mainstream for a number of years now, from Alex Honnold and Free Solo to Meru and Conrad Anker. And then obviously you have the proliferation of climbing gyms in the US and Europe and all over the world, really. But then on another front, outdoor climbing, which is what Summit is really focused on, so rock and ice and mountains, there are local communities all over the world that are really coming into their own. And Summit, as it always was back in the day, I'm really trying to take a global perspective. So even though it's a US-based magazine with perhaps a US focus, we have Ireland in there. I have, hopefully coming in, something, a Cuba climbing story, something in Japan. And for example, I, a couple of years ago, was in Malawi in southeastern Africa, and the climbing community there, it's young, but it's thriving. So it's definitely a sport that is, I think, having a moment, and people are really discovering it. So that's another reason that Summit just felt like a no-brainer. There aren't a lot of print offerings for the space. So,
and I think I can review, because to be honest, sometimes you can be the editor of a climbing magazine but still not climb, but you are definitely a climber, right?
Yeah, I live and breathe it. I've been climbing for over a decade, and I worked as a climbing guide in Vietnam and China for a couple of years. I guess you'd say I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. So I do every kind of climbing you can think of, from climbing El Capitan, a big wall like that, to climbing little boulders, to climbing mountains and ice. And I'm passable at all of them, but great at none of them.
Is there anywhere close to New York that you can do it? Or you have to always go a bit far?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the closest, of course, we have gyms. We have huge gyms. But if you go in Central Park, there's bouldering, actually. So there's some of these old big boulders deposited there during the Ice Age or whatever. You go out there in the middle of the day, pretty much any day, you'll probably see a couple people putting chalk on their hands and climbing on these boulders. And then if you go an hour north of the city, there's this place called the Shawangunk Ridge that is one of the birthplaces of technical rock climbing in America. That's just stunningly beautiful and a mecca for climbers, actually. So it's not a bad place, shockingly.
Well, one day I should try myself.
Yeah.
But I have to start perhaps in a gym or something like that. But Michael, tell us, if someone is interested in Summit Journal, I know there'll be quite a big presence in the US, but can people buy the magazine online, or how does that work?
So Summit is subscription only, but it is available for subscription in the US, Canada, most of Europe, some bigger markets in Asia, such as Japan, South Korea, Australia. And if a place isn't supported, when someone reaches out to us, we add that capability if we can. So yeah, subscription only. We don't have a lot of back issues and we don't sell them by single copy. So the only way to get it is to sign up.
Well, I'm lucky that I have a copy, and I can tell you, even if you're not a climber like myself, I think the magazine offers something very interesting. And the imagery, it is striking. There's something quite poetic. In my opinion, I think climbing and surfing, I know you might disagree, but I think those are two sports that are visually incredible, and there's something quite special about them.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think even beyond visually, climbing and surfing have a lot of synergy, a lot of overlap in the ethos in the attitudes in the sports. They're both kind of these lifestyle sports. And then also in the journalism around them, I think the Surfer's Journal, which is this fairly legendary title with incredible layout and design, is definitely a magazine that I admire and strive to follow in its footsteps with Summit. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's a brand new magazine. Maybe you've heard of it, Fernando, maybe not, called Emotion, spelled E-M-O-C-E-A-N, started by these two young women surfers. And it's kind of a new surfing magazine representing, if Surfer's Journal is, you know, the old guard and this kind of historic title, Emotion is the brand new kind of exciting voice, I would say.
You know what? So, I'll check it out. As soon as we're done with this interview, I'll be checking that out. Is this your first time working with a magazine, Mike, or you have worked in other publications before?
So I have worked for other publications before, and shockingly also in rock climbing. So I was an editor at this magazine called Rock and Ice Magazine, which is another US-based climbing publication that was around since the 80s. And then after that, we merged with another print climbing magazine called Climbing Magazine, and I was an editor there. But both of those titles were acquired in 2020 or so by a startup that acquired a lot of these other little publications. So Yoga Journal and Trail Runner, you know, 20 titles or something, and also acquired Outside Magazine. And then they created a website that kind of aggregates all the content, but they killed all the print publications. So that also, I think, kind of left a void for Summit to kind of put itself out there.
Thank you very much, Michael. And for more information on Summit Journal, go to summitjournal.com. And finally, we head to Japan to talk about a very special awards ceremony. No, it's not the Oscars. It's the Stationery Awards 2024. Georgina Godwin spoke to Monocle's Asia editor, Fiona Wilson, about all things pen, pencil, and notebook.
I mean, it's certainly true that we tend to think of Tokyo as a sort of Blade Runner-ish city, but actually all the school kids, certainly elementary school, are sitting there with pencils, paper. It's still very much rooted. It's very kind of analog education at primary level. And yeah, people absolutely love stationery. And it's not just primary school kids. It's right the way up. People love novelty in stationery. So you still get a lot of manufacturers here who are actually making stationery in Japan. Mm. And they're doing their best to come up with something new to excite customers every year.
And I mean, kids, because school's about to start, isn't it? Kids have pretty much the same kit as each other for school. What would that be? What's a typical sort of stationery set for an elementary school child?
Yeah, I mean, and note, this is all made in Japan, this stuff. So it's very good for the business as well. You know, every school kid will have plain pencils, a set of, so they can practice their kanji. They'll have Mitsubishi pencil, coloured pencils, a set of those. They have a box of what they call crepa, these pastel crayons. And then they have this sort of runny glue. And then, you know, that is the core kit. And they also have a notebook. Everyone has to have a notebook. Very useful for parents, I can say from experience. It's the way we share messages with the teacher. The teacher will write something in there, and then we will write something back and send it with our kids in the morning. So you've got the notebooks, you've got the pencils, you've got the pens, every aspect of the industry is covered. And you know, that's the other thing, it's a huge industry in Japan. I mean, manufacturing stationery, it's absolutely huge, well over €1 billion in business. So it's big news.
Who are the big makers there of stationery?
Well, I mean, names that would be, you know, familiar, I think, to anyone, you know, even not in Japan, like Pentel, obviously huge. Pilot is another pen maker. Mitsubishi Pencil make the coloured pencils. Zebra is big. And, you know, you have to remember, you see this stuff everywhere. It's in every convenience store, loads of stationery shops. And as you say, academic year starting early April. So the shops are full of stationery. And it's a common gift to give someone who's starting an academic year, is to give them some stationery, give them the coloured pencils or the notebooks. And, you know, preferably as decorative as possible.
Mm. And I mean, there's only so much you can do with pens and papers. It must be quite difficult to reinvent constantly, but novelty is important.
Yes, you would think. You'd think, how much can you do? Let me tell you, in Japan, you can do a lot. I mean, they have huge R&D departments, these stationery companies. They really spend a lot of money coming up with new stuff. And it's worth it, because if they hit the jackpot, they have a hit product, they are going to make a lot of money.
And so tell us now about the Stationery Awards.
So there are, I mean, this awards happens every year. I think it's about in its maybe in its 12th year. Brilliant idea. What they did was they've got, there are 13, I think, this year shops, big names, you know, Hans, you've got Loft, Steyr, Marisan Junkador, which is a bookstore which sells a lot of stationery, and they pick their favorite products. And I was amazed to discover for this year's awards, they had a choice of 1,600 products that were released last year alone. So that gives you an idea of where how much innovation is going into stationery in Japan. So, and they basically divide up, they, you know, what's the most innovative, what's the most functional, what's got the best design, and then they give a grand prize to the overall winner.
So who were some of the winners?
I know, drum roll, please. Well, I think if you look at the design award, that's really typical. It's a Uniball, it's called. It's a Mitsubishi pencil. It's a ballpoint pen. Now, ballpoint pens, you know, how good can they be, you think? But they do function absolutely brilliantly. They make sure they work. But this got the design award. And the design element is they come in loads of different colours. The casing, the shaft is in different colours. And what people are doing, they're buying several and they're mixing the bits, sort of mix and match the bits of the case. So that, you know, your pencil case might look a bit different from someone else's. And yeah, that's in lots of bright colours, typical kind of thing that will appeal to school kids.
Mm-hmm. I was particularly taken by the Ukanmuri clip, which basically keeps your book flat.
You and me both. I love this thing. It's the Idea Award this got, sort of innovation award. This is from Sunstar Stationery. And it's basically like a big sort of clip that you can, if you imagine you're opening a cookbook or a textbook that won't quite open, and you clip the thing open and it's just tough enough to keep it open without damaging it, and it comes in all sorts of good colors. I think that was an absolute winner, and that was a very popular one. I think another one that I liked, it won the functional award, but I think it's a brilliant bit of design, I don't know, it's a great idea as well, was Kokuyo, who are a huge stationery maker in Japan, and they make this brand Campus. It's the notebook I use and millions of other people, and they have spent 3 years developing a notebook that doesn't have a sort of valley in the middle. If you can imagine, you open it up and it's completely flat. I mean, it's genius. So they got the functional award, well deserved, I think.
Absolutely. Fiona, I wonder if you, like me, have a guilty secret. Do you have boxes full of empty notebooks?
Yes, I do. How did you know that? Have you been looking in my drawers? I do. And I think you often, it's a common gift here as well. When you go to places, you're often given a notebook. And I'm quite picky about my notebook. I don't know if you are. I do like a Campus notebook. That's my top choice. And if it's not Campus, I'm not so sure. Obviously, use our Monocle ones when I can get my hands on one. But yeah, I think for any journalist, still pen and paper. But I must just get to the grand prize.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if the suspense is probably killing everyone, but the name is not to me a grand prize winner. It's called the Matt Hop. This is Pentel's gel pen. It's a ballpoint pen, and they've developed this special gel ink. When you use this thing, it's a bit like writing with some incredible paint. It's really, the colour is so rich. You can layer the colour, but it's very, very slim. So it's not a big sort of splodgy thing that will get all over your notebooks. It's very, very usable. And the idea is that you buy a whole set and then you can decorate photographs. That's something kids love doing here. They like decorating photo albums or notebooks. So yeah, that's the winner. And, you know, it was all over TikTok, people unboxing this thing and using it and loving it.
Thank you both, and I do need to go to Japan very soon for some stationery shopping. That's it for this week's show. My thanks as ever to our editor, Jack Jewers. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fb@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at 10 a.m. London time. Meanwhile, you can listen again on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.